when One Direction were massive, there was that meme online of like what Americans think British people are like, and it was like Harry Styles, yeah, and what we're actually like, and it was like Shameless.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. This week's guest on New Music We Love is a dance music DJ and producer who's making a lot of noise at the moment with his new single, Not Ready for Love, featuring Maya B, which is out now on Astral Works. He's probably going to be one of the biggest DJs ever. I'm not just saying that because he sat in front of me. If this song, though, is an indication of anything that's to come, it's Sam, a.k.a. TCTS.
Hello, that was a very nice intro.
Thank you. Do you prefer Sam or TCTS?
Sam.
Sam. We'll go by Sam. Yeah. Where does TCTS come from?
When I was a kid, where I grew up, it was like just south of Manchester, like North Staffordshire kind of area. And it was really bandy kind of guitar music area. Everyone was very indie. So I spent a lot of my teenage years kind of playing in bands and making music that way. And it was just the initial fun of the bands that I played in. And the first time I got a DJ show, the guy knew me from this band. So he just put me down as the initials. And then I kind of kept me to change it, and then it stuck, and then here we are.
Yeah, and then like 10 years later.
I'm not going to say the name of the band because it was very angsty and teenage.
Okay, that's fair enough. I was going to say we all have that, but I don't, so you're on your own there, mate. I always find it strange interviewing a DJ or a producer when it's raining outside, because you guys are usually in a different part of the world or hibernating, I feel, come November, December. But here you are promoting a massive dance record this time of the year.
Yeah, I mean, the weather isn't that great today, is it? But it's also nice that we can talk about this kind of music in like daytime situations. It's like club music, but it's also radio music as well. So it's kind of, it's nice that it doesn't have to just be relegated to like that dead of night, in the middle of the club,
Well, as I said to you before, I think in a lot of ways, Not Ready for Love, which we'll talk about more in a bit, is in a lot of ways a pop song anyway.
Totally.
And I mean, it's got a, with Maya B, it's a pop, also a bit of an R&B vocal on it, and it is super different from what I think a lot of people, especially somebody like me who doesn't listen to dance music that much, it, you know, there's a stereotype of what a dance vocal is, and this song isn't that. It brings something really unique to it.
Yeah, I think I've always liked writing pop music. I've always listened to pop music, and I've always wanted to make my music quite somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
like, it's got the club sensibility, but I like writing songs, and trying to kind of marry the two together is like the dream. And yeah, Maya's voice makes it sound so kind of contemporary and exciting, but it is a classic kind of pop record wrapped up in this kind of club thing.
Yeah. So before we go on to talking about new music, there's a lot of new music to talk about. There's a question I've always wanted to ask a DJ, because a part of your job is for your live set is performing, whether it's in clubs or at festivals. And I've always found it interesting, like how you put together a set. Is it the same as when I go on Spotify and put together a playlist once a week? It can't be that simple.
There is a lot of preparation involved in terms of like getting all the stuff into onto your USBs and all that, but I definitely don't do rigid preparation. I have a ballpark idea of the records that I like, but I never, like every time I play, it's always on the fly. Okay. I'll make it up as I go along, like read the room, see what they're responding to, because there's nothing more terrifying than seeing the room stop moving.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God, I need to change something. So if you're like stuck into that rigid playlist, then you're just limiting yourself.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely, I know the songs that I like playing at the moment, but I'll just put them in any order.
That feels terrifying, because even like an artist, like a pop artist, wouldn't go on stage without knowing their entire set. Is that not like so scary that you might play a song, be there, have like the tracks you brought with you and go, damn, like there actually isn't, I don't know the song that I want to play after this.
That happens all the time for me.
Oh,
I don't
terrifying.
Know if other DJs feel like that, but all the time I'll get like a cold sweat and be like, oh my God, where do I go from here?
Yeah.
But I guess it's kind of half the challenge, and like, when it works, it makes it even sweeter.
If I was ever told like, oh, James, do a DJ set, I would be so rigid with the set and it would go so wrong and it'd be silence. And that's actually probably worse than people stop moving is silence.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened as well. Like I've had USBs corrupts or CD. When I first started, I was using CDs, and they can get hair on them or they can skip, and then the music will stop, and then everyone's looking at you and you're
what do you do in that situation?
I mean, the most, because it's usually not technically speaking your fault, even though it is. So you kind of have your first reaction is like, please be aware that this is not like my fault. But then you just have to start it out. Like there's no actual like, it's all love as soon as the music starts again, and then people are moving. They're like, it's all forgiven. But you feel like an absolute lemon for about a minute.
Yeah, that's terrifying. Anyway, we're going to move on from this because it's giving me nightmares.
And me.
Hopefully, we're going to discover a lot of new songs to add to set lists in the future. But let's delve in to our first two songs. Let's start off with this new David Guetta track. It's with another DJ called Morton and Ray as well. It's called Make It to Heaven.
Yeah, I thought it was quite a surprising record in a good way. Like I've got so much respect for David Guetta. Like, he's been around for decades, really. But he was right there from the start of like Ibiza. Like he was there on the Space Terrace, like playing vinyl sets, and he's so respected. And then it's really easy to lump him in with the EDM thing that happened for a few years and people to be a bit dismissive. But he's so good. This record is like a pretty hard techno record at the core of it. I thought the top line was quite like, it's almost like LaRue-esque. Quite haunting. Ray smashed it. And it's cool with David Guetta. He'll release this record. He'll release a really radio commercial record. He'll have his Jack Back alias, which is really like straight up tech house. So, I think it's cool. I think it's amazing to see him putting out the techno record.
I think a lot of people forget that David Guetta is one of the people who made it possible to have a dance track on the radio. Nothing But the Beat, that album and that era of his life, every single track. He arguably was one of the DJs who broke Rihanna in this country. Yeah. What he's done for music's massive. Talking about Ray for a second, I think her vocal in this track is unlike her vocal in any other track I've heard. It's really a different approach from her. But it's so interesting to me because when I first heard what might have even been her debut single, Are You Us, which was probably about 3.5 years ago, the kind of transition she's gone on, you would have never back then, it was much more kind of somewhere between pop and R&B, have expected her in a dance track, but it seems to work so well. Her voice has matured a lot.
Yeah, and then I feel like there's loads of sides to Ray, which is really cool. Like she was on the Jax Jones record.
Yeah.
And that was obviously like a global smash. And then there's like the record that came out a couple of weeks ago, the South London one.
Oh yeah, the Blue Story soundtrack. Yeah.
Like the vocal delivery on that, the performance is incredible. It's a totally different record. So she's just super versatile. She's awesome.
Yeah. The next one we're going to talk about, and we're going to reference this guy again a little bit later on in the show, is a DJ. We think this might be his debut solo single. His name's Fred Again. A producer who you might have never heard his name before, but he's, as we've discovered, or I've discovered earlier this morning, produced a lot of the Ed Sheeran music. He's one of the producers on the new Stormzy, Ed Sheeran, Burna Boy track, which we're going to talk about later. This track, though, is called Kyle, I Found You.
Yeah, Fred is just, he's one of those producers, like, as a producer, I'm a fan of him as a producer, if that makes sense. Like, if you look at his Instagram, he'll do this really kind of interesting, creative stuff. Like he'll find videos on the internet of people talking or little snippets of vocalists who he's worked with, and he'll just flip it into, he'll like remix it into this emo, like club thing. And it's just really creative. I feel like he's, he's just quite an inspirational guy. And then this record is probably one of my favorite things off New Music Friday this week. It's just like this really woozy house record.
Yeah.
This kind of weird vocal.
I think a part of the job of a producer, especially when they're working with other artists, not just on their own music, is to find these slightly obscure references and make it into something mainstream. I always think that like a lot of the time artists are interested in things that are so not mainstream. And it's kind of a part of the task is to take that really, what I think a lot of people would consider strange reference point, and move it into the center a bit and do something with it which makes it more accessible.
Yeah.
And it feels like if this is an insight into, and you're talking about his Instagram as well, into the sorts of things that he's into, that's a really important ability of a producer.
Yeah, totally. And like, it's your job as a producer to make a vehicle which delivers the message of the vocalist.
Yeah.
And it's like the fun of it is you can bring in all these weird references and make this kind of new thing, which like introduces people to this new sound.
Yeah.
Like there's a guy called, is it Ian Kirkpatrick? Who does, yeah. He's like a big hero.
He did the new like Selena Gomez music. Yeah.
And like Dua and stuff like that. Yeah. And I've watched some interviews with him, just being a fanboy. He talks about how he just loves Aphex Twin. And so like he makes it his mission to put nods to Aphex Twin in his records. You can hear that because they're complicated and they're interesting. And I feel like Fred does that again as well.
Yeah.
They're just very interestingly put together.
Yeah, but that's what makes pop music interesting. And I think the state of pop music is so good right now compared to even 5, 6, 7 years ago, kind of around 2010, because people can bring in these different reference points and you can now have, again, a great dance track as a pop track or an R&B track as a pop track. I mean, when the Grammy nominations came out earlier this week, the fact that Billie Eilish and Post Malone are both in the best pop nomination categories says a lot about where these different reference points have come from and what pop is now.
And I think Spotify helps that loads.
Yeah.
Like the landscape is so different than what it was before Spotify. And
yeah,
it's got so much kind of, there's so much music being released on it, which is one thing, but it's not dictated by what radio are going to play now. It's what people want to listen to.
My perspective on like electronic music, dance music, is that it's probably easier than ever now to get into it because a lot of the software can be downloaded even for free and it's much more accessible. You don't, to get into it, at least, you don't necessarily need anything special equipment wise, but it feels like it's harder than ever to break through the noise. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, when I first started producing, when I was I'd gone to uni in Manchester and was avoiding my degree and I got a copy of Logic off a friend, and I've been messing around on Fruity Loops, and I could play instruments, but I was teaching myself to produce using YouTube and using free tools which are out there. So I think, that's even more amazing now that you can just teach yourself a skill if you've got, you know, the time to put into it. But then, it's tough with, I mean, I don't really know how many tracks are put on Spotify every week, but there is so much noise and it's so difficult to know how to best represent your sound and also cut through and also not be like gimmicky to try and do that. It's tough.
Let's go well before Not Ready for Love then. You're talking about how you got a copy of Logic whilst you're at uni. I know a lot of people who are avoiding their degree at Manchester, actually. What made you, though, want to become a producer? What got you to trying things out in the first place?
So I, as I said earlier, I was playing in bands when I was growing up, but I was always into club music and really intrigued by electronic sounds and stuff. Like, my friends weren't so much, so it was tough to kind of discover it like on my own, especially because YouTube was like, I guess I was just spending all my time on YouTube and stuff. But then one of my friends introduced me to like Ed Banger and French House and stuff like that. And then I got to Manchester, which has got this incredible club scene. Like, I was already into kind of the middle point where guitar bands meet dance music. So things like Friendly Fires and I know the Postal Service and things that are doing interesting stuff with organic and electronic stuff. But then got to Manchester and it was Warehouse Project and it was an incredible club scene. And I grew up down the road from it, but I'd never like been immersed in it. And it was a really cool time for music as well. Like, you had things like Disclosure and, you know, Bondax and weird stuff that was going on with like UK club music with Jamie XX and things like that. So week in, week out, there'd be these amazing shows for £3 that you could go and see. And as a student, it was just an absolute dream. And I think I remember really distinctly being in Warehouse Project and one of the residents was playing James Blake, Limit to Your Love, through the system, and I was just like, I want to be that guy playing that. I want to be that guy making that. I just want everything to do with this. Like, it was just so, it was just really cool and powerful.
I feel like one of those bands, but I remember like when I was younger, also Hadouken.
Oh mate, yeah.
And then I was in a meeting with somebody in this building, and anyway, it transpires they were in Hadouken.
No way.
And now they work two floors below where we are right now. Pardon?
Are you friends now?
I'm across friends, but like it was, you, but you know, like, oh my God, that's not a name I've heard of for so long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's all the pictures. And you know, like, obviously when you're in a band, you look different to how you do the rest of your life.
Yeah. What was the other band called? Does It Offend You? Yeah. Or something like that, like new rave era. I mean, those sounds are still like everywhere at the moment. Yeah. That kind of throwback rave kind of thing is always having a moment.
Yeah, but
just, was just like an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, but I think though that, as you were saying before, because of Spotify now, like obviously there are different genres that will go mainstream in popularity, but everything can continue. All these scenes never have to die anymore.
Yeah,
because they can still make money from it. You can still release it. You still can get a sense of like a storefront or promotion from it.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. But anyway, that was just.
Just makes me think of Skins. In that era.
Yeah, as in the TV show Skins. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what? I've actually never watched that, but I've got, there's a list of like Skins, Fresh Meats, and I need to rewatch Waterloo Road at some point.
Oh, I've never watched that.
There's a lot, my brother used to love that. There's a lot of those sorts of shows kind of make it feel quite, doesn't portray being British in the way that The Crown does. It's quite an interesting portrayal of British. I'm not sure if I want to go home and watch that every night.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I feel like the modern version of Skins is that Euphoria program.
Yes, yeah.
Which was sick, to be fair, like really but isn't amazingly executed.
I feel like the shame is, in a way, that Skins is more accurate.
Yeah.
I don't know what I think about it. It's disgusting, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I remember like when One Direction were massive, there was that meme online of like, what Americans think British people are like, and it was like Harry Styles, and what we're actually like, and it was like Shameless.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, back to the music. So your first credited release on Spotify is 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going 8 years next year. How has being a DJ changed for you from then? Obviously, you've had massive tracks, breakthroughs like Games in 2012, which obviously got you charting as well. When you think, though, about this eight-year span, where does your mind go?
God, which was the record which came out in 2012? Oh, 1997. If we go back to then, that was me as a student in Manchester. I had made this thing which got picked up by BBC Introducing locally. It started getting played on the local show, and then it got randomly played by Hugh Stevens on the national show. And then after that, I got a call from some people in London who were like, do you want to have a conversation about management?
And those calls,
like,
yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
So did that, started just kind of coming down for me. It was just, the whole thing has just been trying to like feel my way through it. Like I've got no experience of the music industry. My family aren't in it. It's all just been a bit of a like fumbling my way through. And I basically got management and we put out 1997 super early. That was through Bondex's label. They were like really supportive, which is great because I was still a huge fan of theirs. And then it's just been like just trying to figure out as I go along. It's such a mental industry which I was totally unprepared for. And thankfully I've had good people around me kind of holding my hand through it.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms, to go back to your question of how DJing's changed, at that time, it was when it felt like the kind of the UK, especially the kind of student UK, was really warming up to house music. And it's been quite cool to be like a part of that ride. And you would have promoters up and down the country who are just so excited about house music and sending you to all the unis and to here, there and everywhere to do shows and to the key cities and actually, well, all the cities really. And just everyone was just super wrapped up in that thing that was really spearheaded by your Disclosures and Gorgon Cities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of grown and it's cool because club culture's kind of grown with that as well. Obviously there's the heads who are into the headsy stuff, but in terms of the more accessible, wide reaching stuff, it's really cool that, you know, people who, you know, came through with Disclosure, then discovered people like Midland, and then now they're into people like Peggy Goo. Do you know what I mean? Like going through kind of journeys through house and the width and breadth of the genre sort of thing. Yeah. So I feel like, don't know really how that answers your question, but no, it's just kind of like the first thing that springs to mind.
But I think it's interesting because you as a producer, but also the industry has evolved so much in the past only 8 years. Like,
yeah.
I mean, 8 years is a long period of time, but also, you know, we're about to celebrate going into a new decade.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels strange because 2010 doesn't feel that long ago to me.
Yeah.
So it's just so interesting going from a time when dubstep was being played on mainstream radio with like Bangarang by Skrillex, which is, feels like a different lifetime ago, to like where we are now with, I think, what people's expectations of electronic music being so different, it being accepted into the mainstream. And now it's like, you know, it's when dance music first got that look into mainstream culture, a lot of people wrote it off. Mm. Whereas now it's such a staple that actually, like, you never hear anybody anymore saying about it all being a noise. They say that now about rap music. It's just so interesting how the culture's changed. And as you said before, you very much been there along with the ride.
Yeah, and it's been really cool to kind of grow with it as well.
Yeah.
And go from, like, you know, that kid in Manchester who is like, oh my God, someone's played my record on the radio, what is going on? To actually eventually being able to be like, do you know what, this is my job now, which is like the biggest privilege in the world.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be back talking about some more new music after this. And we are back. So we've got lots more music to go through. Let's do 5 tracks in 100 seconds. And we're going to put 1:40 on the clock. And we'll talk about 5 tracks in 100 seconds.
Let's do it.
Or we'll try at least. Let's go. So the first track I've got here is I Want It All featuring Elderbrook by Casper Cole. This is one of your picks.
Yeah. I got sent this for the radio show, actually, when I first heard it. It's cool. It's got a bit of a brassy Ten Walls thing going on in the synth, but Elderbrook is sounding great on it. It's cool.
Yeah, I'm one of the breakthrough DJs of the past couple of years as well, in UK culture at least. The next one, Joe Hurt's Sophie Faith. It's called Cross My Mind.
I always really like what Joe puts out. He's kind of... he's really soulful. He's quite R&B influenced. He's just a very consistent sick producer.
Next, something much more mainstream, Stormzy, Burna Boy, Ed Sheeran, Own It. This is produced by Fred again.
Your man Fred,
yes.
It's sick. I feel like Stormzy and Ed Sheeran are just kind of...
mates now.
Yeah, loving working together. Yeah. It's just quite nice to listen to.
Yeah, I always like listening to artists when it's clear they're friends.
Yeah, for sure.
And those two aren't likely friends either. But this is... this comes off of Stormzy's upcoming album called Heavy Is The Head as well. Then Lewis Capaldi, new single Before You Go. The first new song we've heard from him since his number one charting album from earlier this year. And another thing that I love, we'll have to go through this more depth afterwards, is artists releasing new music shortly after their projects have dropped. It just gives like a flow to it. And last but not least, Mabel and her Christmas song, Loneliest Time of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a great pop record. Like, it doesn't need to be a Christmas record, but it also works as that as well, if that makes sense. Like, it's not like a gimmicky Christmas record.
Yeah, we've not actually had this year, but you know when somebody's vying for Christmas number one because they'll release a pop song with a couple of bells in it.
Yeah.
And even a few years ago, I know Little Mix have released a Christmas song, but I've forgotten what song it was. Must have been about 4 years ago, but they released a pop single in September, October that just had those little bells at the start, and to me that is like, oh, you know what you're doing.
Yeah,
you're going for Christmas number one. I don't know if they got it in
put a bell in it and a little shaker
makes the playlist. Yeah. It works. Going back to what I was saying about Lewis Capaldi before you go then, one of the things I find super interesting is how, kind of as I was saying before, artists now, we've seen it with massive artists like Ariana Grande, but I love that Lewis has done this. I feel like there's such a pressure for artists after they release an album, and it's like, wow, that cycle, especially if it's your first album, that's like your whole life to date working towards this point. And then maybe you get a bit lost and there's so much anticipation, and actually just dropping something a couple months afterwards breaks that tension.
And I think, like, you said Ariana Grande, and I feel like she's she's quite like hip hop about her approach to stuff. She'll just be like, do you know what? I'll release an album. I'll drop a track. I'll do what I want. Cool.
That's literally one of her lyrics. So, I do what I want. Yeah.
And same with Lewis. Like, he is, everyone just wants to be a part of that ride because he's just seems like a cool guy.
Yeah.
And like, his music's incredible. You just want to hear more. You want to you want to be his mate because his Instagram's jokes and he just seems like a bit of a legend.
One of the things that I respect so much is, so Tori Kelly, she did her debut album, and then for her second album, she released a gospel album, which went on to win a Grammy. But she's not a gospel artist. But again, that broke like the difficult second album thing, because she just went to a completely different genre, did really well in it. So then when her album, which came out only a few months ago this year, which really was her second mainstream album, came out, it was like, it was cool. Because she'd already had success with her second album. That whole, I feel like so much with music, the music gets overlooked by politics and prediction and skepticism and stuff like that. That there are just interesting like release strategies which kind of kill all of that.
Yeah, and you never know what like the best approach would be, like whether it's get your first album out, then just bang out this album too.
Yeah.
And just kind of get it out of the way, or do a big sidestep and do something interesting. But it's tough, like I'm guessing most artists have spent their whole lives writing the records for their first album.
Yeah.
And then you have to kind of move on from those ideas to a certain extent, or reapproach them.
Yeah.
And then you've got to like bang out album number two in like the next year or something. Must be pretty terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, Billie Eilish did it last week as well, like just releasing a new track.
Yeah.
And also I like that as a fan of these artists that we've mentioned in particular. It's like fantastic. I know I don't have to wait 2 years to hear more music.
Yeah.
Or in the case of Hozier, 4. anyway, there's two more tracks that we need to talk about before we get onto Not Ready for Love. First one, we'll go to, well, this is such a struggle for me. Bida Booby. No?
Biaba Doobie. Okay. I think. I only know that because I heard someone say it the other day. Thank God I didn't have to say it first.
Biaba Doobie.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. But I can't say that any faster than how I just said it. So they've released like a Spotify single, Live from Abbey Road. It's called Don't You Forget About Me. It's a cover.
Yeah, it's Simple Minds cover. I think part of the reason I like that is because my dad would play Simple Minds all the time when I was growing up. So it stuck out. But also, I think she's sick. And I really like this kind of, I think she signed to Dirty Hit, which is where like 1975 and No Rome and all them are.
You're right, she is.
Yeah, and she's also part of that wave of this kind of bit shoegazy, bit garagey kind of rock thing. There's like people like Clyro as well.
Yeah.
Who are just, I'm really into it. It's like guitar music, which I really enjoy listening to.
Yeah.
I'm definitely here for Biaba.
The kids are just a bit angsty.
They always
have been, but it's so strange though, because I first heard about Biaba Doobie yesterday, and now here we are, she's on New Music Friday, so obviously something's going right. And then the last one, very different, Gorgon City, Roped In, which I mean, Gorgon City have been doing a really interesting release strategy as well, where they've just kind of been releasing tropes of music over a couple of years now, really.
Yeah.
And just working it single to single and EPs to EPs, which is kind of, I feel like, what you've got to do.
I think that they've really nailed it. They've kind of got the dream situation going on, where they can put out really solid pop records, and then they've got their label where they can put out the Club Weapons, which service that side as well. And they are obviously really versatile artists. They were versatile artists before they became Gorgon City, so they clearly know how to produce great music. And then this new record is like probably the biggest example of that, I think, in their recent output. Like, I was in a session the other day, and the guy I was with was like, have you seen this like thing that's getting teased up on Twitter? Someone's put about the new Gorgon City record, and it was like a live thing of them playing it, and it's got those like arpeggiated chord things which are super emo and like deep and emotional, and they kind of like ramp up and down in speed and then like drop into a big beat, and it's just, it's sick. It's an absolute Club Weapon.
Yeah.
And they put some stuff up to totally geek out on it. They put some stuff up on Instagram earlier, like showing their Ableton session with like this the sensing and stuff, and just kind of cool to nerd out and just watch that as well. Yeah. So yeah, big respect, big record.
Amazing. Well, it's finally time to talk about Not Ready for Love, which you reminded me earlier is actually written by one of our previous guests of this podcast, Gracie.
Yeah.
Who's an amazing songwriter.
Yeah.
The song came out last month. Where, tell me the process. Where did this all start?
So yeah, Gracie wrote the top line. She's just like one of the most talented people that I've ever worked with. Like she's a star. And it's cool to see her launch her project and it smash it as it always would have done.
Yeah.
I'm signed with Astral Works out of LA and through Positiva in the UK. And Maya B is signed out there, girl from LA, and she's just super exciting, perfect fit really for this record. And she agreed to jump on it, and as soon as I heard it, I was like, yeah, cool, like this is the vocal.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I feel like that's quite rare, because a lot of the time,
yeah,
like as with anything, if as a producer especially, a big part of your job is piecing things together.
Yeah.
And to find the perfect vocal first time round, yeah, especially when the vocals, like the Maya B vocal, as we mentioned before, isn't what you'd expect from a dance track, and that's one of the things that makes this song so refreshing. For you to hear something really quite risky first time and be like, yeah, you must have had a strong instinct.
Yeah, and it's really tough as well, because you, when I wrote it, obviously I'm getting used to Grace's vocal on it,
yeah,
her demo vocal, and she's like a phenomenal vocalist, obviously.
Yeah.
So you fall in love with that, and then you have to try and get out this demoitis thing where you have to get used to a new version, which is usually, yeah, super tough and one of my least favorite parts about kind of getting used to a record. But it just didn't happen with this.
Yeah.
Like it's big shoes to fill. And she absolutely smashed it.
It's almost like sometimes when things come the easiest, that's how you know it's the right thing.
Yeah.
I mean, not just with music, but in so many things, you can push through and push and push and push, and actually then something will happen so naturally, and that was the way it was always meant to be.
Yeah.
So that's so good to hear. We've come to the end of our time. I've got one more question. Mm-hmm. It's called the final question, and it's always linked to something that we've spoken about in the episode. My final question for you, TCTS, aka... that's wrong around. Sam, aka TCTS. My final question: if you could collaborate on a song with one other DJ and one vocalist, so much like with David Guetta's got Morton and Ray on that record,
mm-hmm,
on the same track, who would the DJ be and who would the vocalist be? So we're going TCTS plus somebody else.
I'm going to say Calvin Harris.
Okay.
Because
modest,
yeah,
guess, yeah.
Because if we're allowed to reach, then I'm gonna be going straight there. I want the Vegas residency, and obviously he's a don as a producer and vocalist. Do you know what? Because she's in my mind, because we spoke about her earlier. I'm gonna say Billie Eilish and just make something really weird and dark.
Yeah,
and
God,
moody.
TCTS.
I like moody stuff.
Calvin Harris and Billie Eilish on a track. That, well, I mean, we'll have to hear it. Amazing. Well,
someone make that happen.
Thank you so much for coming on the
podcast.
Thank
you for having me, man.